The Terror of Blue John Gap by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited. Copyright Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2011. Part 4. April the 25th. I was laid up in bed for 2 days after my incredible adventure in the cavern. I use the adjective with a very definite meaning, for I have had an experience since which has shocked me almost as much as the other. I have said that I was looking round for someone who could advise me. There is a Dr. Mark Johnson, who practices some few miles away, to whom I had a note of recommendation from Professor Sanderson. To him I drove when I was strong enough to get about, and I recounted to him my whole strange experience. He listened intently, and then carefully examined me, paying special attention to my reflexes and to the pupils of my eyes. When he had finished, he refused to discuss my adventure, saying that it was entirely beyond him. But he gave me the card of a Mr. Picton at Castleton, with the advice that I should instantly go to him and tell him the story exactly as I had done to himself. He was, according to my adviser, the very man who was preeminently suited to help me. I went on to the station, therefore, and made my way to the little town, which is some 10 miles away. Mr. Picton appeared to be a man of importance, as his brass plate was displayed upon the door of a considerable building on the outskirts of the town. I was about to ring his bell when some misgiving came into my mind, and crossing to a neighbouring shop, I asked the man behind the counter if he could tell me anything of Mr. Picton. "Why," said he is the best mad doctor in Derbyshire, and yonder is his asylum." You can imagine that it was not long before I had shaken the dust of Castleton from my feet and returned to the farm, cursing all unimaginative pedants who cannot conceive that there may be things in creation which have never yet chanced to come across their mole's vision. After all, now that I'm cooler, I can afford to admit that I have been no more sympathetic to Armitage than Dr. Johnson has been to me. April the 27th. When I was a student, I had the reputation of being a man of courage and enterprise. I remember that when there was a ghost hunt at Coltbridge, it was I who sat up in the haunted house. Is it advancing years? After all, I am only 35. Or is it this physical malady which has caused degeneration? Certainly my heart quails when I think of that horrible cavern in the hill and the certainty that it has some monstrous occupant. What shall I do? There is not an hour in the day that I do not debate the question. If I say nothing, then the mystery remains unsolved. If I do say anything, then I have the alternative of mad alarm over the whole countryside, or of absolute incredulity, which may end in consigning me to an asylum. On the whole, I think that my best course is to wait and to prepare for some expedition which shall be more deliberate and better thought out than the last. As a first step, I have been to Castleton and obtained a few essentials, a large acetylene lantern for one thing, and a good double-barreled sporting rifle for another. The latter I have hired, but I have bought 12 heavy game cartridges which would bring down a rhinoceros. Now I am ready for my troglodyte friend. Give me better health and a little spate of energy, and I shall try conclusions with him yet. But who and what is he? Ah, there is the question which stands between me and my sleep. How many theories do I form, only to discard each in turn? It is all so utterly unthinkable. And yet, the cry, the footmark, the tread in the cavern, no reasoning can get past these. I think of the old world legends of dragons and of other monsters. Were they perhaps not such fairy tales as we have thought? Can it be that there is some fact which underlies them? And am I, of all mortals, the one who is chosen to expose it? May the 3rd. For several days I have been laid up by the vagaries of an English spring, and during those days there have been developments, the true and sinister meaning of which no one can appreciate save myself. I may say that we have had cloudy and moonless nights of late, which, according to my information, were the seasons upon which sheep disappeared. Well, sheep have disappeared. 2 of Miss Allerton's, 1 of old Pearson's of the catwalk, and 1 of Mrs. Moulton's. 4 in all, during 3 nights. No trace is left of them at all, and the countryside is buzzing with rumours of gypsies and of sheep stealers. But there is something more serious than that. Young Armitage has disappeared also. He left his moorland cottage early on Wednesday night and has never been heard of since. He was an unattached man, so there is less sensation than would otherwise be the case. The popular explanation is that he owes money and has found a situation in some other part of the country whence he will presently write for his belongings. But I have grave misgivings. Is it not much more likely that the recent tragedy of those sheep has caused him to take some steps which may have ended in his own destruction? He may, for example, have lain in wait for the creature and been carried off by it into the recesses of the mountains. What an inconceivable fate for a civilized Englishman of the 20th century! And yet, I feel that it is possible, and even probable. But in that case, how far am I answerable both for his death and for any other mishap which may occur? Surely, with the knowledge I already possess, it must be my duty to see that something is done, or if necessary, to do it myself. It must be the latter, for this morning I went down to the local police station and told my story. The inspector entered it all in a large book and bowed me out with commendable gravity. But I heard a burst of laughter before I had got down his garden path. No doubt he was recounting my adventure to his family.